not get back to normal unless the age hike is revoked. But France has seen massive anti-government unrest regularly for well over a decade, and usually over far-right austerity measures. France and the European Union continue to be hounded by accusations that they are anti-democratic, and the latest of many French presidential decrees has only further increased dissatisfaction and dissent.
There is growing realization that our major national policies are decided in Brussels, and that our president is a mere puppet. We're also subservient to Washington. Simply look at what we're doing in Ukraine for more proof. So there's no hope that we'll have democracy during the last 4 years of Macron's term. But if we don't get it in 2027, things will explode.
Union leaders left the closed-door meeting, calling it not useful and a one-way monologue. The pension age hike has overshadowed other crises, such as record inflation, the arming of the unrest in Ukraine, and stagnant wages. But all of those remain unresolved flashpoints as well. Barring a surprise reversal from the government, unions are planning a 14th day of nationwide strikes next month. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
May 5th, the day of resistance and resilience. May 25th has been officially designated as the day of resistance and resilience in the Iranian Solar Hijri calendar, and refers to the staunch resistance and resilience of the people of Dezful, a town in southwestern Iran, which emerged from the 8-year imposed war defiant and unbowed, even though it came under a persistent and frequent barrage of Iraqi Baathist missiles and rockets, which lasted for years. The town of Dezful, in Khuzestan province, is known as the capital of resistance to this day, because of the valiant resistance of its people under harshest of conditions in the 1980s, during the 8-year imposed war. Please stay with us for more. Dezful is located in northern Khuzestan province, a town in southwestern Iran. Despite the fact that the town was subjected to almost daily barrages of missiles by the Iraqi Baathist regime, the courageous people of Dezful constantly rebuilt those parts of their town which had come under attack and refused to abandon their homes. The resilient people of Dezful dashed the hopes of the Baathist invaders. The people of Dezful never surrendered under toughest of conditions, even when Iraqi Baathist missiles were raining down on them. Every Friday, the local people, along with the young fighters and defenders of the town, took part in Friday prayers, with Ayatollah Ghazi as their Friday prayers leader. Despite the threats and intimidation by the Baathist regime, and pressure on the people of Dezful to evacuate their town, the courageous and defiant locals never abandoned their town and made sure that the Baathist dream of capturing and abandoning Dezful remained just that, a dream which never saw the light of day. The town of Dezful was targeted so often by Iraqi Baathist missiles during the war that it became known as the Town of Missiles. In fact, in 8 years of imposed war, Dezful was hit by 176 Iraqi ground-to-ground missiles, 2,500 heavy artillery shells, and 331 air-to-surface missiles fired by the Iraqi Air Force. Over 19,000 homes and businesses in the town of Desful were destroyed. But the people of Desful never gave up, they never surrendered, and quite rightly became the symbol of resistance and the symbol of resilience in the Islamic Republic of Iran. The town offered a total of 2,600 martyrs to Islam and to the Islamic Revolution, 250 of whom were children. What amazed the people of Iran, as well as the wider world, was the resilience of the people of Desful and their unstinting, generous and tireless assistance to the fighters of Islam during 8 years of sacred defense. Life in the beleaguered town of Desful went on, despite all the hardships. The people of Desful tolerated Ba'athist missile strikes day after day, month after month, and year after year. Many of the town's residents were martyred during this extremely difficult period of time. But the people of Desful wholeheartedly resisted the Iraqi invasion and defended their town and country tooth and nail. Their steadfastness and their resilience became a national honor, a badge of honor for the Islamic Republic of Iran. But why did the Ba'athist military forces concentrate their attacks on this small town in Khuzestan province in southwestern Iran? After all, Desful's location was not particularly strategic. The town had no industrial or economic significance of any kind. It was not a military center. There were no guns or ammunition depots in Desful. And it wasn't a center of political or military decision-making. So why did the Ba'athist army consign two of its six active divisions to conquering Desful? Despite all their efforts, the Iraqi Ba'athists never conquered Desful, and they only advanced as far as the Kalkher River, close to the town, but they never actually managed to capture Desful. If the town of Desful had fallen to the Iraqis, this would have been a huge psychological blow to the Iranian forces, and conceivably the whole province of Khuzestan may then have been captured by Saddam's army. But the heroic resistance of the people of Desful scuppered this and prevented the Ba'athist advance into southwestern Iran. Quite rightly, the people of Desful are regarded as real heroes of 8 years of sacred defense. But they also paid a huge price for their epic resistance. The people of Desful offered 2,600 martyrs, 4,000 injured veterans and amputees, 452 prisoners of war, and 147 young men listed officially as missing in action. The founder of the Islamic Revolution, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, paid homage to the people of Desful for their epic resistance. The Imam said, "The people of Desful have been tested and they came through with flying colors. They paid their dues to Islam and to the Islamic Revolution." The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has also commented on the heroic resistance of the people of Desful during 8 years of sacred defense. Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The Iraqi Ba'athist forces had invaded the desert of Abbas and they were here in large number near Desful. They wanted to cross the bridge over the Kalkher River and coming to the town of Desfaux. But this was prevented by the heroic resistance of the people of Desfaux. The late Ayatollah Ghazi refused to leave Desfaux. The Friday prayers imam, Ayatollah Ghazi, who refused to leave the town, this effectively meant that the people of Desfaux remained in the town, and the town was never evacuated. If Desfaux had been evacuated and was empty of people, this would have been a huge blow to the Islamic Iranian forces. The late Ayatollah Ghazi, who was blinded in one eye, chose to remain in Desfaux, and this meant that all the people of Desfaux remained in the town, and a heroic resistance took shape. This, of course, is a source of pride for the Islamic Republic of Iran.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Papua New Guinea has signed a defense and maritime cooperation agreement with the U.S. during the U.S. Pacific Islands Forum in Port Moresby. The agreement was signed by Defense Minister Win Bakridaki and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who flew into the country early on Monday in the place of U.S. President Joe Biden. In a meeting with PNG Prime Minister James Morape during the signing ceremony, Blinken said the United States would deepen its partnership across the board with the country.
The Defense Cooperation Agreement, drafted by Papua New Guinea and the United States as equal and sovereign partners, will enhance the PNG's defense forces' capabilities to deliver humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, including through providing medical care and temporary shelter to those who are affected by crises.
Morape, for his part, hailed the deal as a mutually beneficial agreement.
Both sides have agreed that the agreement that we're signing today is doesn't offend Papua New Guinea law, doesn't offend USA law, is mutually beneficial. Especially and for me, in the context of Papua New Guinea, it secures our national interest to grow into becoming a robust economy in this part of the world as we live today and going forward.
PNG's Prime Minister James Morape said that to implement the deal, there would be an increased presence of U.S. military personnel and contractors over the next 2 years. However, he insisted that the Americans will not establish a U.S. military base on the island. Morape also denied reports that U.S. staff would have legal immunity and said no amendments would be made to the constitution or laws of the country. That's after a leaked draft document suggested Port Moresby has given U.S. personnel and contractors legal immunity, allowing aircrafts, vehicles, and vessels operated by or on behalf of the U.S. to move freely within its territory and territorial waters, and exemptions for U.S. staff from all migration requirements. The U.S. State Department announced the new pact covers security, defense, and maritime surveillance, and would provide $45 million to help improve bilateral cooperation, including protective equipment for the Papua New Guinea Defense Force. PNG, with a population of nearly 10 million people, is the most populous Pacific Island nation, located just north of Australia. The region has witnessed increasing militarization in past years, raising concerns among civil society groups. They accuse Morape of setting the stage for future hostilities between the U.S. and China. PNG's former Prime Minister Peter O'Neill accused his successor of placing the country at the epicenter of a military storm between China and the U.S. by agreeing to enter into defense agreements with both superpowers without consultation with people. Also, opposition leader Joseph Lelang from the People's National Congress said last week, "We should not be blinded by the dollar sign or be coerced into signing deals that may be detrimental to us in the long run." He said the foreign policy of Papua New Guinea is friends to all and enemies to none. In the midst of growing rivalry between Washington and Beijing in the Pacific region, China has warned against geopolitical games in the South Pacific after the U.S. signed a security agreement with Papua New Guinea.
What we must be vigilant about is the use of cooperation as a pretext for engaging in geopolitical games, and we believe no cooperation should target third parties.
The foreign ministry spokesperson, however, stressed that China has no objection to normal exchanges and equal, mutually beneficial cooperation with Pacific Island nations, including Papua New Guinea. She said any negotiation and cooperation agreement should benefit regional peace, development, and stability. The Pacific nations manage around 20% of the world's oceans. These hugely important maritime routes were used in World War II to transport supplies to Australia and New Zealand. Western interests in the Pacific waned after the war, but Chinese investments in the region have grown. Beijing has worked to strengthen ties with several island nations over the last decade, sending aid and investing in schools, roads, and bridges. However, in recent years, the U.S. has been expanding its military presence in the Pacific as part of its strategic shift to East Asia, where it seeks to contain the growing power of China.
Mission accomplished. Iranian Navy's 86th flotilla has wrapped up its 8-month voyage and returned home. The flotilla, comprised of domestically manufactured Dena destroyer and Macron forward base ship, arrived at the southern port city of Bandar Abbas on Saturday. The naval fleet set sail on a mission around the world from Bandar Abbas in September 2022. The flotilla stopped at the port of Mumbai, India, and then docked in the Indonesian capital, Jakarta, after passing through the Bay of Bengal and the Strait of Malacca. The fleet continued its journey towards Java Sea and passed through the Strait of Makassar, arriving in the vast Pacific Ocean for the first time in the history of Iran's military seafaring. Crossing the Pacific Ocean, the fleet moved toward the Strait of Magellan in the south of the Americas and entered the South Atlantic Ocean. The naval squadron also passed the coasts of Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, and finally anchoring in the port of Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. The flotilla then crossed the Atlantic Ocean and anchored in the city of Cape Town, South Africa. It then berthed in the coasts of Oman and finally sailed into the Iranian territorial waters. An official ceremony was held in Bandar Abbas to welcome the arrival of the naval fleet. Addressing the official homecoming ceremony of the flotilla, the chief of staff of the Iranian Armed Forces said the arrival of the 86th Naval Flotilla is a source of pride for the Iranian nation and a landmark accomplishment in the history of the country's naval missions. Major General Mohammad Hossein Bagheri said the flotilla concluded its historic voyage on the high seas to mark what he called an outstanding achievement despite Western-led sanctions against the Islamic Republic. General Bagheri said maritime prowess is among the most important factors of Iran's military might. He added, "We do not lack anything to achieve such an ideal and are gifted with homegrown industries for that purpose." He noted that the Iranian courageous commanders and marines undertake naval missions valiantly and fearlessly. The arrival of the naval fleet to Bandar Abbas comes as the unprecedented move of the Iranian Navy in carrying out such difficult missions ushers in a new era for the Iranian armed forces. As Major General Bagheri put it, the 86th flotilla of the Navy fulfilled a historic mission. Even major countries in the world do not have the courage to undertake such a task. What makes the Around the World mission significant, though, is the way Western countries, namely the United States, reacted to it. In February, the U.S. Treasury sanctioned the two ships while they were on the international voyage. According to Iranian officials, the U.S. has also failed to prevent the Iranian naval flotilla from sailing through the Panama Canal, an 82-kilometer waterway in Panama that connects the Atlantic Pacific Oceans. Iran's Navy commander, Rear Admiral Shahram Irani, has said, quote, "The global arrogance tried to block the Iranian flotilla's mission through threats and sanctions, but the successful voyage marked another slap in their faces." The Navy commander also said that France claimed that the Iranian ships had entered its waters, but they changed course when they were reminded of their own shipping rules and regulations. All those reactions highlight Iran's naval prowess in international waters. In recent years, naval forces of the Islamic Republic have enhanced their presence throughout global waters to protect shipping routes and provide security for merchant vessels and tankers. The Iranian Navy has also regularly carried out patrols in the Gulf of Aden and the Indian Ocean to fight piracy in an effort to secure vessels commuting in international waters, not to mention that numerous attacks on Iranian or foreign vessels have been thwarted by the Iranian Navy in recent years. All in all, the unprecedented voyage by the 86th Flotilla not only has shown Iran's maritime capabilities, but drove home the point that the language of threat and force does not work with Iran, as it is committed to asserting its strength in international waters and providing security to its vessels. Thousands have rallied in the besieged Gaza Strip to commemorate the martyrdom of several commanders of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement during the recent Israeli aggression on the coastal territory. The rally also honored those civilians who fell victim to the regime's onslaught earlier this month. The demonstrators vowed to maintain their resistance in the face of the regime's atrocities against Palestinians. In an address to the ralliers, one of the leaders of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, Khalid al-Batch, remembered the group's commanders who were assassinated during the five-day Israeli onslaught. Batch said, "We want to tell the whole world that though the F-16 airstrikes and the American 139 rockets were fired toward us, this nation is still alive and will continue the resistance." He said, "We attest our right to freedom. From their blood, we'll continue the resistance. From their death, we received the power to face the Zionists. We will continue." Meanwhile, a similar event was held in the Syrian capital Damascus, where Islamic Jihad Secretary General addressed ralliers. Ziad al-Nakhala hailed the Palestinians' victory against Israel during the regime's recent aggression against Gaza. He said the regime was forced to accept Palestinians' terms for a ceasefire in the face of hundreds of rockets fired into the occupied territories. Nakhala added that Palestinians dealt another hefty blow to Israel's already tarnished image. The official attributed the Palestinian victory to their unity and sacrifices. Nakhala vowed a strong and painful response to any future Israeli assassination of the group's commanders. The recent Israeli aggression on Gaza started on May 9th with the regime launching a devastating campaign of deadly bombings targeting senior commanders of the Islamic Jihad and their families. The Islamic Jihad, in response, fired barrages of rockets toward the occupied territories. The conflict marked the worst episode of fighting between Gaza's resistance factions and the Israeli regime since the 10-day war imposed by Tel Aviv on Gaza in 2021. After 5 days, the two sides agreed to an Egyptian-brokered ceasefire that took effect on May the 13th. But flashing back to some of Israeli-Palestinian conflicts since 2000, one would find that the Palestinian resistance has been gaining momentum ever since. Testimony to that claim is that according to figures, from September 2000 to December 2006, over 1,000 rockets were fired into the occupied territories. The rockets were all fired in response to the killing of 80 Palestinians by the Israeli regime. In 2008, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas carried out rocket-fired and mortar attacks against targets across the occupied territories, hitting previously untargeted cities such as Beersheba and Ashdod. That also in response to the killing of plus 1,000 Palestinians. In 2014, the Israeli regime carried out its deadliest aggression on Gaza, killing more than 2,000 Palestinians, including 1,400 civilians, according to UN figures. That onslaught also prompted one of the deadliest Palestinian retaliations against Israel, with more than 70 Israelis being killed. All those powerful retaliations bring to the spotlight the power and strength the Palestinian resistance has attained during the past two decades or so, with the Israeli officials admitting that the Islamic Jihad fired 1,000 rockets toward the occupied territories during the recent Israeli-Gaza aggression. It goes without saying that the Palestinian resistance has indeed gained momentum. Maybe that's why resistance movements like Islamic Jihad has come to the understanding that resistance, in fact, is a national duty which is based on the legitimate right of Palestinians to fight against the Israeli regime, something that has proven to be the only successful deterrent against Israeli aggressions.
The Syrian President Bashar al-Assad at the Arab League summit, his one-time enemy Saudi Arabia's Mohammed bin Salman, seen here greeting him. A symbolic moment, sealing Assad's reintegration into the Arab fold after being suspended from the League and isolated by most of the region for over a decade. A man who wanted him dethroned, who supported terrorist groups with the sole aim of toppling him. But now, that is wonder under the bridge. Assad lining up for the League's family photograph. Every handshake, confirmation of his reintegration. One after the other, Arab leaders welcoming Syria's reintegration, and during his own address, Assad repeatedly said that Syria belonged to the Arab world. There have been words of condemnation against Saudi Arabia and the Arab League normalizing ties, rhetoric from the losing end of the so-called Syrian opposition, something that should be shelved in the archives, for there is a new reality taking shape in West Asia. The Arab League Secretary General made sure to relay that message. Saudi Arabia is now a firm believer that security cannot be bought and that countries in this region can establish their own security. The Saudi Foreign Minister, Prince Faisal bin Farham, called for cooperation between Arab countries to achieve security, stability, and economic prosperity. West Asian security, however, does not serve the interests of the U.S. All of these reconciliations with Syria is shunned and rejected by the U.S. The decision to readmit Syria to the Arab League represents a rejection of U.S. interests. The Arab rush to welcome Damascus back into the fold has happened despite public objections from the U.S. U.S. efforts at easing Mr. Assad out and replacing him with an inclusive, democratic government have gone nowhere, leaving American officials on the sidelines. That is one view. However, additionally, U.S. lawmakers are proposing a bill that would prohibit Washington from either recognizing or normalizing relations with any Syrian government led by Assad. The legislation is also a warning to Turkey and Arab countries that if they engage with Assad's government, they could face severe consequences. But who's listening? Challenges do remain. Arab countries are keen to invest in Syria, especially in its reconstruction. But the U.S. legislation builds upon the CSAR Syria Civilian Protection Act, a 2019 law that authorized sanctions on those who do business with the Syrian government. Then there's the issue of Israel, who has continued bombing Syria. How will Arab countries deal with Israel when it comes to Syria? Israel is one of the sorest losers in this, since now there's a stronger united front in the form of an axis of resistance against Israel. On the one hand, the U.S., who is occupying Syrian soil and stealing and selling its oil, is an outsider, accompanied by the Israeli regime, which has no cards left to unify Arab countries against Iran. Nevertheless, China's view on the diminished U.S. role in the region, which closely mirrors Iran's stance, has said it best. Syria's Arab League reintegration, proof that when the U.S. shadow shrinks, peace spreads.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد عودك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions in Practical Tajweed Rules held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. So I really, really welcome you all, and also our brothers here, Brother Ali Nasir and Hussein Ruhullah, Hassan Nasrullah and Fawad Haider. Inshallah, today, Ayah 120 of Surah Ali Imran on page 65 will be our main topic. So without wasting the time, let's first everybody listen to the recitation.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In tamsaskum hasanatun tasu'hum wa in tusibkum sayyi'atun yafrahu biha wa in tasbiru wa tattaqu la yadurrukum kayduhum shay'a.
That was a nice recitation, but don't worry, okay? Inshallah, if you'd love to recite that way, stay with us, brothers and sisters, till the end of this session. We'll have an explanation first, tajweed rules second, and third, we'll practice the recitation with tajweed rules. Inshallah, we'll have the result maybe this way, right? Well, we hope, yeah. So Allah Almighty in Ayah 120 of Surah Ali Imran, the family of Prophet Imran, and on page 65 says, أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ إِن تَمْسَسْكُمْ حَسَنَةٌ تَسُؤْهُمْ وَإِن تُصِبْكُمْ سَيِّئَةٌ يَفْرَحُوا بِهَا وَإِن تَصْبِرُوا وَتَتَّقُوا تقوا لا يضركم كيدهم شيئا إن الله بما يعملون محيط. So Allah Almighty says, إن تمسسكم حسنة, if some good things, okay, good thing should befall you, if something good happens to you, okay, easily, if something happens to you, something good happens to you, it upsets them. Who? The kuffar. Those people that you think they really are friends of you, but they are not, right? If something good happens to you, it upsets them. وَإِن تُصِبْكُمْ سَيِّئَةٌ, but if some ill or something bad happens to you, they rejoice at it. يَفْرَحُوا بِهَا, they will enjoy it. Wow, that's what I wanted. Okay? And if something good happens to you, oh God, why? Why? They become sad. Is a friend like this?
No.
No? A friend is not this way. A friend in need is a friend indeed. A real friend is the one who becomes sad in our sadness. Who grieves, okay, for our sadness. And who becomes happy with our happiness.
But this kind of people, the kuffar, okay, they are not like this. If you have like relationships, yeah, he's your neighbor, it's okay. Do not harm them, okay? Respect them as human beings, okay? But do not have close relationships with them. Do not reveal your secrets with them. Sometimes we want to make friends, okay, with them just to guide them. But remember that if you are not capable enough of guiding, okay, if you yourself are not guided, if you don't have enough knowledge, okay, about your religion, okay, God forbid you will be misled. They will misguide. They will guide you to their religion. So remember, even if you have this intention to guide them, first yourself should know much about your religion, okay? Enough. You should have enough knowledge about your religion. Not to, God forbid, to fall in trouble, okay? If they asked any questions from you, you should be able to answer them. If you are not, you will fall in doubt. And if you don't go for the answers to your questions, you will like start disbelieving to your religion. So, Allah Almighty says, وَإِن تُسِبْكُمْ سَيِّئَةٌ يَفْرَحُوا بِهَا. But if something bad happens to you, they rejoice at it. They will enjoy it. Wow, that's what I wanted to happen to him. وَإِن تَصْبِرُوا, O people, O mu'min, وَإِن تَصْبِرُوا. And yet, if you are patient, وَتَتَّقُوا, and God-wary, okay, if you apply taqwa and if you are patient about what they try to do to harm you, okay, if you are patient at these things, what happens? لا يضركم كيدهم شيئا. If you are a believer, believe that whatever Allah Almighty says is right. لا يضركم شيئا. They will not harm you anything. Yeah, this kind of harms, okay, that daily you see, okay, one Muslim is killed there, got martyred. This kind of things happen, okay, but at all, okay, generally, they cannot harm you. You are stronger than them. All Muslims, you are stronger than them. All right? وَإِن تَصْبِرُوا وَتَتَّقُوا لَا يَضُرُّكُمْ كَيْدُهُمْ شَيْئًا. Their plot, their guile, will not harm you in any way. إِنَّ اللَّهَ بِمَا يَعْمَلُونَ مُحِيطٌ. Indeed, Allah comprehends. Allah has knowledge over what they do. All right? That's Allah has knowledge. Allah knows what they want to do. And Allah knows what is the outcome of their deeds, okay? Their actions, their plans. And Allah is telling us, informing us of their plots, informing us of their attributes, their feelings about us. So, that's it, guys. Be careful, inshallah. May Allah protect us from all their plots, inshallah, and help us stay strong against them, inshallah. And defend Islamic teachings.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا
القرآن. Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
Okay, ready to go to the Tajweed rules?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's all from us, okay, in explanation. But that was a short one. Remember, you have to refer to the Tafsir books. In this ayah, the first important point that we should mention is let's generally talk about the rules of Tanween and Nun Sakin. There are how many rules for Tanween and Nun Sakin?
Four
rules. So, we have four people here. So, each of you will say one of them. Hussein?
First rule is Idgham.
Idgham. Ali Nasir?
We have Idhar.
Idhar. Fawad?
Ikhfa.
And Hassan? Iqlab. Good job. So, Idgham means Hassan? Hussein?
To merge.
Merging sound. Idhar?
Idhar means to not change anything.
Yeah, clearly.
Clearly read the, pronounce.
Good. Ikhfa means?
To hide the sound of the tanween or noon, depending on the next letter.
Good job. Nice explanation. And Hassan, iqlab means?
Changing.
Yeah, iqlab means changing. Changing of the sound of tanween or noon sakin into meme, hidden meme sound. In case you have a ba after the tanwin or nun sakin. So it depends. These different rules depend on what? On the letter that comes right after the tanwin or nun sakin. So, If one of these letters, yar malun, ya ra mim lam waw nun, comes after the tanween or nun sakin, the rule idgham is applied as Hussein said. We merge the sound, we join them. If the throat letters, hamza, ha, ha, kha, ayn, ghain, one of these six letters come right after the tanween or nun sakin, the rule idhar is applied as Ali Nasir said. And if the letter ba comes right after the tanween or nun sakin, the rule iqlab is applied as Hassan said. And the rest of the letters, a lot, many more letters are there, like 13 letters are there, 15 letters are there. But if they come after the tanween or nun sakin, the rule, what rule is applied?
Ikhfa.
Ikhfa, as Fawad explained it. MashaAllah, to Fawad, to Ali Nasir, to Hassan, to Hussein. Alright, now, in tamsaskum, in nun sakin, ta, rest of the letters. Yes? The rule?
Ikhfa.
In tamsaskum. Easy, hide the sound. Hasanatun, tanween plus ta, ta, rest of the letters. Hasanatun, what rule? Fawad's rule, ikhfa.
Yes.
Hasanatun, tasu'hum. Wa in, again, Fawad's. Oh, Fawad, what are you doing? All the rules are for you. Wa in tusibukum. Okay. If ba, qaf, ta. Ah, good job. Five letters are there that if you see they appear, if they appear sakin, you have to apply the rule qalqala. Which means, yes, which means you pronounce them with an echoing sound. Tusib, tusibukum, qaf, ta, ba, jim, and dal. وَإِن تُصِبْكُمْ سَيِّئَةٌ تَنْوِين plus ya. Ya matches the letters of
يَرْمَلُونَ
يَرْمَلُونَ as Hussein said. Hussein, what rule is applied?
إِدْغَام
إِدْغَام وَإِي sorry سَيِّئَةٌ يَفْرَحُ بِهَا وَإِن تَصْبِرُوا again إِدْغَام إِخْفَى وَتَتَّقُوا لَا يَضُرُّكُمْ كَيْدُهُمْ شَيْئًا Shay'an, but if you stop here, Tanwin Fatha changes to Alif Mad. Shay'a. Qila tells you it's better to stop here, but you can continue. Inna Allah, Nun Mushaddad, nasal sound. Inna Allah, Bima Ya'maluna Muhit. When you stop here, the Tanwin on Ta changes to Sukun, and you must apply the rule Qalqala. Pronounce it with an echoing sound. So, that's all for Tajweed rules in this ayah. Now, what we promised earlier in the beginning of the session, we'll practice the recitation. Okay, Ali Nasir?
Yes. Ready? Yeah.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
إن تمسسكم حسنة تسؤهم وإن تصبكم سيئة يفرحوا بها
إن تمسسكم حسنة تسؤهم وإن تصبكم سيئة يفرحوا بها
وَإِن تَصْبِرُوا وَتَتَّقُوا لَا يَضُرُّكُمْ كَيْدُهُمْ شَيْئًا
وَإِن تَصْبِرُوا وَتَتَّقُوا لَا يَضُرُّكُمْ كَيْدُهُمْ شَيْئًا
إِنَّ اللَّهَ بِمَا يَعْمَلُونَ مُحِيطٌ
إِنَّ اللَّهَ بِمَا يَعْمَلُونَ مُحِيطٌ
صَدَقَ اللَّهُ الْعَلِيُّ الْعَظِيمُ
صَدَقَ اللَّهُ الْعَلِيُّ الْعَظِيمُ
Ahsanam. Thank you so much. That's it from us for today, brothers and sisters. If you want to learn Tajweed rules, recite the Quran with Tajweed rules beautifully and correctly, join us every day on IRB English Radio this time. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's Recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Palestinian children.
Part 1.
The men and women of Gaza are busy piecing their lives back together, attempting bravely to cope with extensive loss of life and displacement. And thousands of innocent children suffer deep trauma every day since having their families, friends, homes, hospitals, schools, etc. deliberately, intentionally bombed by Israel with its military. The story of the suffering they experienced and continue to experience is told in the looks on their faces, full of sadness and despair, especially whenever they recall the 50 days of war they witnessed and survived in 2014. At the end of that war, the number of martyrs killed on the Palestinian side reached nearly 2,500, including 500 young children. The number of the wounded amassed to 12,000, of whom 3,300 were young children. Every child of Palestine now carries with them memories of explosions, of screams of horror, of seeing dismembered and burnt bodies, of the smell of death brought down on them by the inhumane, unconscionable actions of Israel in its efforts to oppress its occupied territory. A tank massacre here, an airstrike massacre there, is all justified by Israeli politicians and condoned by Western governments that protect these Israeli war criminals from ever facing justice in court.
This is the first time I've entered the school since the incident. It's painful and depressing for me. Inside the school, I felt my brother's presence, as if he was calling my name. He was martyred here. I also got a sense that my mother wanted me to pray for him here. The feeling is of utter sadness and grief.
Hussein and Ibrahim are standing on the ruins of the house overlooking the school in the northern Gaza Strip town of Beit Hanun. This school belongs to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees. UNRWA is a UN organization. They recall back to the second day of the month of August 2014.
We are staying at the house of the late Shabab Ahmed al-Shinbari. Here there are 25 family members all living in a three-floor house, 150 square meters. The Israeli occupation forces targeted this house during its 2014 military aggression on the population of Gaza. We were evacuated quickly and headed to the UNRWA school in Beit Hanun shortly before our house was bombarded.
It was midnight when they blew a hole in our house with a tank shell about where we are sitting. We escaped to my uncle's second house, but they dropped gas bombs there. My aunt said we should prepare ourselves to go in different directions in the morning. We went to my aunt's house in Al-Gharman Street, but the Jews entered and demanded us to leave. Finally, we went to the Western School at Beit Hanun.
We moved from our home on the first day of the ground incursion mounted by Israeli forces. We went to Beit Hanun Co-ed School A and D blocks. A municipal vehicle arrived on Thursday to transport us to another school because children at Beit Hanun had been hit by shrapnel. There was a bombardment near the school where we were sheltering.
We have informed the IDF, you know, nearly 32 times about the school, its a place, who were in that school, what they are doing, and, you know, everything, you know, that it is should be a safe place, that you have the UN flags and the GPS had been sent to the Israeli side. The real information, in real time, we were sending them every day about everything.
Officials at the UNRWA relief agency in Gaza believed Israeli army assurances regarding the guaranteed safety of their accommodation centers, accordingly informing the displaced people that a school in Beit Hanun, which was sheltering hundreds of Palestinian refugees, was a safe zone. Like blood to a vampire, however, this gathering of displaced families incited the appetite of the Israeli occupation army for killing, which found easy prey. They informed the UNRWA Relief Agency and International Red Cross to evacuate the school of the displaced. The people gathered in the school yard and waited for the arrival of buses to take them somewhere safe, all of them a clear and easy target for slaughter. The Israelis rounded them up and killed 16 of them where they stood, mostly children, and wounded more than 55 others.
The Red Cross came 2 days earlier. There were 3 Red Cross vehicles and 10 Red Crescent vehicles. They announced that they came to transport the most serious cases, such as those with disabilities, the elderly, and the injured, mostly shrapnel injuries. As they took people away, we asked them what was going on, and if they thought the school was safe. They confirmed it was safe and that there was nothing to fear. We trusted that information. The UN and the Red Cross came 2 days later with buses to move more of us to the Jabalia refuge camp. People gathered in together and we all went downstairs.
My aunt was collecting laundry and about to sit and rest when the shells pounded us. Shrapnel sliced open my stomach and my intestines fell to the ground. My brother found me lying underneath my siblings. He moved me outside and on foot he took me to the Kamal Udwan Hospital. They urgently referred me to Ashifa Hospital, where I went under surgery. 10 centimeters of my intestines were cut off. Now every time I eat and when I drink water, my stomach hurts.
Five of my family were martyred, praise be to Allah. 16 other people were injured, including Manar, who lost both her legs, Ibrahim, whose intestine were reconnected, and my brother Mahmoud, who had his arteries severed.
What happened in that school, it was a real catastrophe, actually. We have tens of people that had been killed and injured in that school. The Board of Inquiry investigated, you know, what happened in Beit Hanun school. It is a message, you know, that here in the Gaza Strip, that there is no safe place, even in a school, on the street, at your shelter, to your home, everywhere. No safe place at that time.
We don't want to stay here at the school. They forced us to come here. We don't want to be here at the school. They are all liars.
People of the world find it impossible to believe that anyone, even a Zionist occupation force, would have the audacity to bomb the accommodation centers of the United Nations. The Israeli army had orders to kill anything that moved, and this policy was exercised throughout Gaza in their ground incursion. On the 16th of July, 2014, 8 children from the Bakr family went to play on the beach of Gaza. They were kicking around a soccer ball when from Israeli military ships in the sea, missiles fired on the beach, specifically targeting the children playing.
On July 16, 2004, Ismail was sitting with his cousins. I told them that it was Ramadan and that they shouldn't be playing football and bothering the neighbors. The street is too narrow to play football. It's 2 meters wide, which is not enough room. All of us here are brothers and cousins. We live in a sector of homes the size of 1 square kilometer, which houses 1,000 people thereabouts. Ismail said he was going to play outside with his cousins. It was sunny and hot, so they went to the beach to play as they often do. It's not far, and it's the only suitable place to play, next to the part of the beach reserved for swimming.
Stay in here, son. There's shelling outside. He said he wanted to go to his uncle's house to play with their kids.
Ahid is my one and only grandson. He came after 9 granddaughters. Zakaria, my beloved son, the youngest. He was spoiled. He was my entire life.
I am accompanied by Al Said, Hamada, Yunus, Ismail, Ahid, and Muhammad, and we're heading now to the spot where we used to play as kids. We are fishermen, and so the sea is our life. We are always on the sea.
The Bak family is a renowned family. We're known to be fishermen by trade. We inherited that from our fathers and from their forefathers who inherited it from Sheikh Bak. The sea is life and breath to us. When our children want to play, they go to the beach.
We set up the goals here and divided ourselves into 4 teams, and we played football. The boys said they're thirsty. They wanted to go drink some water and come back. I took them to get some water, and when we came back,
we resumed and finished the first round. In the middle of the second round, Ismail kicked the ball and it landed next to the container. We asked him to go get it. He brought it back, along with Mutazim, Zakaria, Ahid, and Muhammad.
The warships were there. We saw that they were filming us. They sent a missile to the beach, and it wiped out my cousin. The first missile landed there, killed my cousin Ismail, and we started running to get off the beach.
The rest of the group came running toward us. We saw them, but Ismail wasn't with them. Bashir Abu Warfa was standing there. When he heard the explosion, he came out from the tent. He stood by us while we told him that Ismail was killed. The other children reached us.
They fired a second missile, and it landed here.
We decided, Hamada, Yunus and I, to hide behind the tent. Muntasir was on the ground. They fired another missile at us as we fell behind the tent. Yunus hid in a barrel while Hamada and I kept running. Muntasir ran with us. Hamada and Montasir entered the tent seconds after us. Bashir Abu Warfa was crying out, "O people, help us. The children are dead. The children are dead."
We are with you.